This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
You know, one thing we have a slight regret as we welcome you to today's program is the fact that we are not really delving into the whatever we damn well please as much as we used to. No, the fact is, as we record shows here in the year 2024, we're looking around and are scared. We're scared at the prospect of an insane person who should be behind bars actually becoming the President of the United States for a second go-round.
Well, I thought you were talking about me there for a second.
Well, no. In fact, I'm unaware of any reason for you to be behind bars. Is there something I don't know about?
Well, let's just keep it that way.
No, back in the third grade, when I was given a wonderful book on the U.S. presidents, there were a lot fewer of them then, I remember learning to my surprise that one man was listed as the 22nd and 24th president. That would be Grover Cleveland. Back in 1884, Democrat Cleveland became the first Democrat to win the election, or actually, correction, to become the president since James Buchanan in 1856. Now, the truth of the matter is, Samuel Tilden won the 1876 election, but it was stolen from him by a conspiracy of Republicans. You can look this up if you don't believe me. We've talked about this on the show in the past and did a brief summary of what happened in 1876, which marked the second time that someone won the popular vote but didn't manage to get into the Oval Office. The first time it happened was in 1824. That's a complicated picture. But of course, it's a sad commentary on our electoral college system that you can win the popular vote and not become president. In fact, it keeps happening. It happened in 1824. It happened again in 1876. It did not happen when Cleveland won in 1884. Back in 1884, if you're keeping score, and you're probably not, but I'm going to tell you about it anyway, Grover Cleveland defeated an amazingly corrupt Republican named James G. Blaine. 4 years later, he was matched against Benjamin Harrison, a man whose grandfather had been elected president back in 1840, but unfortunately, a month after taking office, dropped dead. That was William Henry Harrison, whose campaign did leave us with one of the more memorable slogans in American history, that being Tippecanoe and Tyler Too, which in fact may have been William Henry Harrison's most important contribution to American history. Anyway, in 1888, Grover Cleveland won the popular vote, but was defeated in the Electoral College by Benjamin Harrison, the third time it happened in American history. Cleveland won the rematch in 1892, and in trying to decide, well, what number presidency do we give him? Well, they made him the 22nd president in 1884, but then Harrison was the 23rd, and they said, well, we're going to restart. We're going to say that Cleveland is also the 24th president, which is why, when you look at the list of presidents of the United States, you'll note that they're one short in terms of number of individuals who have been president. It is our fondest hope that come the November election, this will not happen a second time, and that Donald Trump will not be the 45th and 47th president of the United States. We hope that come January, the tally of individuals versus number presidents will stay at, you know, just one short, not two short. It is sad to note that in the 21st century, this notion of winning the popular vote and not becoming president was repeated two more times. Al Gore won the popular vote in 2000, but had the election stolen from him by Republicans. In an eerily reminiscent repeat of 1876. And in 2016, Hillary Clinton got 3 million more votes than Donald Trump, but managed to lose by a squeaker in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, condemning her to 4 years of private life with Bill, and condemning the American public and the world at large to 4 years of Donald J. Trump. Now, the fact is, Trump has always been a pathological liar. But what's different now versus 8 years ago is that Trump is a pathological liar showing signs of dementia. And shades of Gerald Ford, Donald Trump has just apparently faced his second assassination attempt. Now, we're going to turn that discussion over to Dave Pakman at the end of this first segment, because Pakman talks about this pretty well. A lot of Republicans are saying that, you know, it's the hateful language of the Democrats that have gotten all these would-be assassins pointing rifles at the president's head. But that would be a proposition that is entirely erroneous, as you will hear shortly. I got a call earlier today from attorney Bill Simpich, who's been an excellent guest on this program, I believe, more than once, and no doubt will be again in the future. I had to step back from it in a moment and just say, Bill, isn't it amazing that Donald Trump is the Republican Party nominee for president instead of a man in a jumpsuit behind bars? Bill had to agree that it was, and yet, here we are. Now, about 90 minutes ago, as we were planning what we're going to do for this show, the Week magazine had not yet arrived. But it did so in the meantime, and I found some great stuff in it that is going to, I think, direct some of our dialogue. I mean, I hate to use the word monologue. So feel free to jump in, Mr. McMillan.
Oh, I will.
Good, good. The Week mentioned something that I had not detected in the media, which was that Tucker Carlson has been on a tear lately. Writing in The Bulwark, Kathy Young noted that last week, Carlson, a former Fox News host, took his MAGA audience on a deep dive into Holocaust denial and Hitler revisionism. And you have to ask, well, how could it be that that Tucker Carlson is trying to give a new look at Hitler, which, by the way, was a punchline of a joke a couple of decades ago. Someone, and I can't remember who it was, but when we were first doing this program, I quoted him, or perhaps it was her, as poking fun at the effort of the media to appear fair and balanced by saying, and now for another view of Hitler. But like so many things, the joke of a couple decades ago is now the hard reality of the present. Anyway, Tucker Carlson evidently conducted an interview with the rabid anti-Semite Daryl Cooper, introducing Cooper as the country's best and most honest popular historian, and noted The Bulwark invited him to promote his laughably bad history of World War II. And, if you're ready for this, in their chat, Cooper described British Prime Minister Winston Churchill as the war's chief villain. After all, he blamed him for not making a peace deal with Hitler. And folks, I wish I was doing satire here, but I'm not. Mr. Cooper argued that Hitler's extermination of 6 million Jews in concentration camps was accidental. His alleged reasoning? Well, Germany was just completely unprepared to feed millions of, quote, prisoners of war, unquote. And no, how it is this so-called historian manages to conceive of citizens of your nation, stripped of all their possessions, belongings, and rights, and stuck in concentration camps as, quote, prisoners of war, well, I can't help anybody with that one. The Bulwark notes that Tucker Carlson does have Trump's ear, and reportedly lobbied for J.D. Vance to be his running mate. And later this month, Vance is set to appear on stage with Carlson, and it is noted that he has pointedly refused to join the outrage over Carlson's chat with Daryl Cooper. And in case you missed it, which we'll go into in our second segment today, J.D. Vance is admitting that these stories, Haitians eating dogs, etc., well, those are things that they're just sort of making up. Or I guess in his description, you know, repeating what his supporters are saying, which is maybe slightly better than Donald Trump's defense during the debate when he was corrected on the fact that authorities in Ohio were not reporting Haitians eating the pets. His response was, and you may recall this, was on TV. And we're pretty sure, dear listener, that you were very much aware of this fact, but we do want to point out that just because something appears on TV does not make it true. And I snagged a bit on the same issue of the week, on the same page, actually, where they were referring to writing in the Dispatch, in this case by Nick Kitoggio, commenting upon Carlson's creeping fascism, saying it was no surprise to him. For years, Carlson's exploited the ideological chaos on the Trumpified right to promote racist authoritarian views, noting there is no Republican establishment left to stop him. And that notion just does rattle around my brain. You may recall, if you were listening to this program, I don't know, about was 13 years ago, we had on Barry Goldwater's granddaughter, Cece Goldwater, wherein she talked about a documentary about her grandpa, who back in the 60s was considered a right-wing crank of the highest order, at least by people who were to the left of him. Today, with his anti-authoritarian views and, you know, what I guess you'd have to call non-traditional Republican notions of supporting gay rights and a number of other issues, Barry Goldwater today would probably be called a rhino, Republican in name only, by the MAGA crowd. This might be a good point to mention that there are something like 1,030 programs of Radio Parallax on our website, radioparallax.com. And if you never heard Cece Goldwater on our show or a lot of other fun stuff we've done in the past couple decades, well, go to the website and noodle around. And I should note, and probably should have started the show with this, but I should note now, better late than never, that we've gotten some great feedback on last week's program. We talked about the proposals to tear out the trees on the American River Parkway, noting that it was not getting the kind of press coverage that we thought it deserved. And I received calls subsequently from a couple of friends who were unaware of what was going on and were very glad to have heard about it on the show and are looking forward to our further discussions of it, which we're going to have. And if you weren't listening last week, we would urge you, dear listener, to check out AmericanRiverTrees.org, one word, American River Trees, just like you think it'd be spelled. And the other website you should check out is www.sararriverwatch.org, S-A-R-A, River, Watch. Both websites are full of information which the public should be aware of. And for our part, you know, it is gratifying to put something out there and then get feedback from people that say, I did not know about this. Thank you for informing me. And so naturally, we plan to do more of that. Anyway, you know, one thing I never thought we'd do in this program is give an attaboy to Dick Cheney. Suffice it to say, we are not huge fans of the former Secretary of Defense, White House Chief of Staff, and Vice President under George W. Bush. But it should be noted that among all living former Republican presidents, vice presidents, and presidential or vice presidential nominees, only 2008 vice presidential nominee Sarah Palin has publicly endorsed Donald Trump. Trump's own vice president, Mike Pence, along with the Republican presidential ticket of 2012, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, have joined Dick Cheney in saying they will not vote for Donald Trump. Although I'd feel better if those three individuals indicated they were voting for Harris, because we're probably not going to be helped by any of them voting for Mickey Mouse. So hats off to Dick Cheney for saying he was going to vote for Kamala Harris because Trump can never be trusted with power again.
Well, neither should he, but he's not running.
True enough. Anyway, Radio Parallax was not intended ever to be a political program, although we thought we would delve into politics. And, you know, I'm kind of missing the fact that some of these items on the table in front of me are things I just am going to put off talking about. Normally, we'd like to talk about how there appears to be signs of volcanism on the planet Venus. I mean, like current lava flows and stuff. Pretty interesting. Or maybe the fact that in a few weeks there's going to be an annular eclipse of the sun. Well, at least if you're on Easter Island, there will be. And I don't know that we have any listeners on Easter Island, but if we do, we welcome your feedback to the program. There had been some talk a half a year ago of yours truly and girlfriend making the trip down to the South Pacific for this annular eclipse, but that has been derailed, in part due to the need to talk about politics and in part due to some other stuff. I was mildly surprised to learn that Bill Simpich, our lawyer friend with an interest in the JFK assassination and many other political events, went to Dallas for the eclipse in April because Dallas was damn near on the center line. And what do you know? He got to see it. Now, Mr. Millen and I have been looking at a lot of clips, some of which we're going to play for you in the second segment today. And the word that we stumbled upon last week that we really liked was the term sanewashing. Now, corporations that like to pretend that some of the things they're doing, which might not be so environmentally friendly, are actually better than you think, are accused of greenwashing. And we've cited many examples over the years on this show, but we really like that term, sanewashing. And I think I should quote from Parker Malloy, writing in the New Republic on that term, noting, along with Parker Malloy, that faced with an incoherent candidate who has blamed wind power for the high price of bacon and insists that Latin American countries are sending legions of Hannibal Lecters across the border, the media routinely engages in sanewashing, laundering Trump's insane rants to make him sound far more coherent than he actually is. They're failing to adequately convey the threat of a candidate who's vowing to wage a bloody campaign to deport millions of illegal migrants and impose, quote, long-term prison sentences, unquote, on Democratic lawyers and election officials who work to ensure voting integrity. Noted the New Republic, as Trump veers further off the rails, the dangerous disconnect between what this demagogue says and what's reported is widening. And that isn't just poor journalism. It's a form of misinformation that poses a threat to democracy. Writing in Salon, Heather Digby Parton said, consider the coverage of Trump's recent address to the New York Economic Club. Asked how he would address a crisis in affordable child care, he responded with a rambling, incoherent defense of imposing tariffs on foreign trade. We made mention of this on last week's program, and we will play a clip in our second segment today, which goes over this very issue. We mentioned on last week's program, as does Salon, that the New York Times and some other news outlets paraphrased his response rather than simply printing his incomprehensible babble. Even worse was his truly demented declaration on a recent Moms for Liberty event that public schools are performing transgender surgeries on children without their parents' consent. Noted Heather Digby Parton, in major media reports on this event, that ridiculous claim wasn't even mentioned. USA Today said if President Biden had said anything that detached from reality, cable news panels will be discussing how the 25th Amendment works. So where are the banner headlines and calls for the cognitively impaired 78-year-old Trump to step aside? Writing a rather limp-wristed defense of the media's coverage was Andrew Sullivan in his Substack newsletter saying, the left's griping about the media is overwrought. Trump has sounded nuts since his first run in 2016. So unlike Biden's rapid decline, it isn't news. To frame every news story with the narrative of Trump's mental illness is not and cannot be the job of a reporter. Now, I don't know much about Andrew Sullivan, but I imagine that he went to law school. And as a lawyer who was on this program a couple decades ago told us that when you're practicing before a court appearance as a young lawyer, it was advised that you look into the mirror and state your argument to yourself. And if you can keep a straight face, well, then you may want to try it in the courtroom. Yeah, the reasoning here, Trump was nuts in 2016, he's nuts in 2024. So that's different than Biden not being nuts and then appearing a little addled.
Yeah, no need to keep bringing up that Trump is nuts all the time.
Sure, people get tired of it. Anyway, counting that inane argument was Margaret Sullivan in her Substack newsletter saying, it's also not good journalism to provide false balance to avoid being accused of bias. If the media normalizes Trump's lunatic claims and authoritarian threats, it effectively becomes pro-Trump. All right, we got about 4 minutes before we're going to jump over to Dave Pakman here. So I think what I'll do is take an interlude of the good, the bad, and the ugly. At any rate, according to The Week magazine, it was a good week last week for, well, enhancing California's reputation for lunacy, I think would be how I would describe it. The news is our state Senate here in California has approved a bill that will require all new cars to beep at their drivers if they break the speed limit.
Like this?
Meep, meep.
Well, I hope not. Now, this measure is opposed by many motorist groups and automakers. But Senator Scott Wiener, the bill's Democratic sponsor, says it will save lives and be less intrusive than a previous bill mandated that cars would actively prevent their drivers from speeding. Said Wiener, "We listened and we heard." For my part, I'm glad that Senator Wiener's hearing is in order. I just wish the same could be said about his brain.
Meep, meep.
Anyway, it was a bad week last week for team building, with the news that an injured Colorado man was abandoned by co-workers on a mountain during a corporate retreat in the Rockies. Rescue workers who found the unnamed man the next day predicted some awkward encounters at the office. Gee, Harry, we didn't know what the heck happened to you. And finally, it was an ugly week last week for eating contests. And of course, I have to pause and ask, is there anything uglier than an eating contest? My own response would be, no, I don't think so. But the news story is that New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu used the Heimlich maneuver to save a choking participant in a lobster roll eating contest. And here's the part where it really goes south. Said Sununu, he went right back to the contest. He ate another 7 lobster rolls right down the gullet. I think about all I can say to that is that had he choked to death on that 7th lobster roll, well, maybe he would have had it coming. And in a final item that we think combines good, bad, and ugly, we have this. A man in Rome was caught burglarizing an apartment after he became engrossed in a book about the Iliad, which he found on a table. After entering through a balcony, the would-be thief spied a copy of the book and, thinking the apartment empty, sat down to peruse it. When the owner awoke, found the intruder still reading, the man bolted out the balcony but was quickly arrested. Giovanni Nucci, author of the book, The Gods at 6 O'Clock, hopes to send the man a copy, saying, "I'd like him to be able to finish it." Let's take a look at someone trying to shoot Donald Trump a second time. This has not happened since 1975, when there were 2 attempts a couple months apart on the life of Gerald Ford. Now, we can't swear to this, but we're pretty sure back in 1975, both Squeaky Frome and Sarah Jane Moore, the two women who tried to take a shot at Ford, were not former Ford supporters, which is apparently true in this case. Take it away, Dave Pakman.
Well, welcome, everybody. It happened again. A former Trump supporter took a gun to one of Trump's golf courses with the intention of assassinating the former president. This time, he did not, it is believed, get any shots off, was shot at, fled the scene, and was ultimately apprehended and arrested. Let's start with the story about what happened. A 58-year-old named Ryan Wesley Routh, or Routh, was hanging around a couple of holes ahead of where Donald Trump was playing at his West Palm Beach golf club yesterday. Secret Service agents, as I guess is protocol, they moved 300 to 500 yards ahead of Trump, which is a couple of holes ahead. They saw in the shrubbery the barrel of an AK-47 style rifle. They shot in that direction. This is the best information we have now. The would-be shooter, Routh, fled and was subsequently apprehended. Donald Trump is safe and announced that he is safe. And now we start with the finger pointing and the blaming, the conspiracy theories, and all sorts of other stuff. Those who immediately claim this is obviously a concerted effort from the left to take out Trump in advance of the election because the left is so afraid that Donald Trump is going to win. those who say this is a setup by Trump after a completely disastrous debate performance. One might argue the worst debate performance in the history of American debates dating back, I mean, you know, in the modern era, televised era, to Richard Nixon's sweaty, flu-like 5 o'clock shadow debate against John F. Kennedy. Okay, so the idea is it's Trump who set it up to distract from the fact that his debate performance was so bad. We don't have any evidence for any of those things. What we have evidence for right now is that the would-be shooter, the would-be assassin of Trump, supported Donald Trump in 2016, but then through some combination of radicalization and maybe mental illness and ready access to guns, turned on Trump and decided that he wanted to solve a political problem with a gun. In 2020, Routh voiced his dissatisfaction by tweeting, quote, "Donald Trump, while you were my choice in 2016, I and the world hoped that President Trump would be different and better than the candidate. But we all were greatly disappointed, and it seems you are getting worse and devolving. You are retarded. I will be glad when you gone." So what we have right now, and I understand that the MAGAs are saying the social media trail is fake. This is clearly some far leftist because he supported Ukraine against Russia. Most of the world supports Ukraine against Russia. All of the evidence is this was a Republican who was disillusioned with Trump for not being enough of whatever it was that he had hoped. Not an altogether different picture from the other guy who tried to kill Donald Trump.
We need to take a break at this point to allow for a guy to play a couple public service announcements. We got lots more after that, but take it away, Guy.